Second case this morning is 2021-761, the State of Ohio versus Alan Schubert. For the appellant, Ms. Campbell.
Thank you. Good morning. Mr. Mishka, Your Honors, Chief Justice, may it please the court, I'm April Campbell on behalf of Mr. Schubert. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. For the good faith exception to apply in any case, an officer must give the reason why the factual circumstances upon which he forms his belief that evidence might be found in the place he's asking to search. It is not enough when asking to search a particular place to say that evidence might be found in that place. Courts have traditionally found that the good faith exception does not apply without those facts to back up the belief, whether it be a belief that evidence might be found or whether it is a conclusion that evidence will be found.
Well, we're talking about a telephone here, correct?
Yes.
All right, and ostensibly the reason for the search of the phone was to determine if either the victim or Mr. Schubert was texting or speaking on the phone immediately prior to the accident.
That is not a possibility that the affiant himself stated. It is something that the trial court believed was possible. The trial court was pretty clear within the transcripts and actually in his decision that it believed that anytime there's a car crash, but you don't know the reason why, you're allowed to search the phone to see if there's evidence of distracted driving. That is a possibility. It's a possibility based off of a speculation that a phone was used at all.
Well, how would you know for certain in order to put something in the warrant that's going to satisfy what you're discussing here?
Well, there has to be some sort of factual circumstance to support the conclusion that evidence might be found in a place.
Like a witness saying, I saw him texting beforehand or something?
I saw something in his hand that was rectangular and flashing, or I had one of those things on, the suspect had one of those things on his dashboard that looked like it was broken, as if the phone had flown out of there. We don't have any of those facts here. The trial court even pretty clearly stated,
but those
as did
would all be facts that would show probable cause, right? There's got to be some daylight between what's probable cause and what's a bare bones.
Yeah, there has to be daylight between it, and I think
so,
it.
So, you've given us facts that would show probable cause. What? Give us some facts that would allow an officer to rely on it, but wouldn't amount to probable cause.
Facts less than bare bones, but wouldn't amount to probable cause.
Facts where the good faith exception would apply.
Well,
because
yes.
all I hear you say is, there's no indicia of probable cause. Those are the things that you're saying here. So there has to be some time when the exception would apply. So what facts would those be? What would have to happen then?
Yes, I think that is the point. There just has to be something. I'm talking about a fair probability that there'll be something in the place to be searched.
But I'm asking you to show me what it is, to tell me what it would be.
I think saying that there was a witness who saw something in his hand or saw a rectangular object fly out of the car is not
that sounds
probable
like, that
cause.
That sounds like probable cause to me. So how about something that where the good faith exception would apply? Are you just saying it's probable cause is the only standard?
No, what I'm saying is every time that there is nothing and you have to go into the place to be searched to therefore find a crime, that should send a flag that there's nothing sufficient to get into that place to begin
well,
with.
Well, how about the fact that, the telephone was on?
The fact that it was on?
Yeah, it wasn't turned off.
Like, the officer shows up, the screen is highlighted.
Or the phone is on, it's not turned off.
Or there is using Bluetooth and the officer shows up and hears something from the phone indicating the phone was in use, potentially.
Again, that sounds exactly like probable cause. So, I mean, your rule can't be that unless there's probable cause, the good faith exception doesn't apply.
Well, I think the rule can be there must be something, some factual support to upon which the belief is formed. I think that is
fatality,
why.
You have a fatality car crash?
Yes.
You have an individual who tests positive for methamphetamines and amphetamines. He has no memory of the crash or how it occurred. 3 cell phones are found at the scene of the crash. Law enforcement is investigating how the crash occurred. That's not sufficient?
No, I think that the fact that there's drugs in his system provides the cause. He was impaired, he was high. I don't think it provides a cause to get into someone's phone. There's
well,
no causal connection.
You are assuming that being under the influence was the cause. What if it wasn't the cause? What if distracted driving was? This is an investigation into a fatality.
Mm-hmm.
No one has a memory. The other individuals involved in the crash are dead. The only living individual has no memory of the crash whatsoever.
It's still only a possibility. It is just as much of a possibility that Alan Schubert was rummaging through his car looking for methamphetamines, only discovered he'd already consumed them. That's just as equal of a possibility as saying he was distractedly drove. We could say he was closing his eyes and, you know.
Well, isn't that distracted?
Based on his cell phone? No.
Searching for something, closing your eyes, doing anything other than operating a vehicle.
Those are all the possibilities of distracted driving. They also have nothing to do with a phone. And I think the point is there has to be a causal connection between any sort of factual circumstances and the place that you want to search.
Would your position be different if he was not found with drugs in his system?
No, because I still think that the definition of bare bones is that you can't just state something, a conclusion, even if you believed 100% it was going to be true. The affiant has to provide the circumstances upon which his belief is formed in order for the neutral and detached magistrate to be able to say, yeah, that's fair probability.
But this affidavit described exactly the circumstances on which it was played. This is not, if you look at the cases with bare bones affidavit, those are officers just saying that they believe something. Here you have the officer laying out the facts, the accidents, you have the 3 cell phones, and then you have the officer who did exactly what he was supposed to do. Instead of going through the phones, he went to the magistrate. He let the magistrate evaluate. He got a search warrant. And was the officer really supposed to second guess the judge and say that there was not doesn't amount to probable cause?
I think there has to be an objective reasonableness to presume that the place you want to search is going to be the right place to search. And I think the fact
and again that seems like a really good argument for why there was not probable cause to issue this warrant. It doesn't seem like a very good argument to say there was no probable cause to say that the magistrate couldn't rely on it because there's no probable cause.
Well, I think this case, the affidavit within it contains much less than this court's decision in Castagnola, where the person was texting from his phone about some vandalism that he did and was at his home when a CI came, and the officer stated in his affidavit that he just believed that there would be evidence of a crime within the home, and this court said, well, that is conjecture. We don't have anything. We don't have your reason why. Yes, there's emails, vandalism, or text messages of vandalism, but how is it connected to the home?
There were 2 searches in that case.
Mm-hmm.
One was a search warrant in order to seize objects from the house. There was not a secondary search warrant to actually enter the computer.
Okay.
So here, as Justice DeWine just explained, he laid out all the facts of the crash. Instead of going through the 3 phones, because he doesn't know who belongs to what, he takes it to the hearing officer, who makes a probable cause decision that's sufficient in order to issue a warrant. How can the officer then not rely on that?
Because there still has to be a nexus between the place you want to search and any sort of facts to back up that connection. If this court would turn to the Sixth Circuit's decisions, Lafton, well,
if,
Weaver.
Even if this magistrate made a mistake, okay, took what was in the affidavit, she decided that was sufficient, she granted the warrant, issued the warrant, and then the officer acted upon that. He goes out, acts upon it. If there is a problem with the warrant, it doesn't rest with the officer acting on that warrant. Wouldn't it rest with the decision the magistrate made? And if that's the case, then he was entitled to rely on the magistrate, the validity of the warrant issued by the magistrate. That's not his concern to second guess or question the magistrate, you know, are you sure what I put in the affidavit is sufficient for you to make this call, Madam Magistrate? They don't, that's not how it works.
Well, I think the Leon Court specifically noted that the good faith exception is not intended to create for magistrates to start rubber stamping everything, and also the idea that the magistrate signs off on a warrant and therefore good faith exception always applies. I would think there would
well be no, it wouldn't apply if the affidavit was deceptive. You know, then. And the officer that was executing was the one that signed the affidavit and, you know, put the facts in that were speculative, deceptive, et cetera. But we don't have that here.
Yes, that's one of the good faith exceptions. There are three others. The Leon Court talks a lot about what this course is talking about and then describes why objective reasonableness is required. When there's objective reasonableness, it does... an officer does have to look at it to see if it's objectively reasonable. That does deter police misconduct. The idea that false accusations alone is the only part where good faith is at issue here, I think the Supreme Court would say differently.
Counselor, I'm sorry, I don't recall. Was the affiant and the officer who conducted the search the same officer?
No, not at all. I think that the affiant in this case reviewed...
I'm sorry, say that again.
The affiant in this case reviewed the investigation and set forth the facts within the affidavit.
Okay.
Further, we have to talk about the privacy interests in this case, and the reason why I'm talking about it is because this court has, when discussing whether the good faith exception applies. Privacy interests in cell phones are very high, Riley decision as well as multiple others, and they are... too high in the context of cell phones to say that anytime there's a car crash, one could just go get a warrant and then therefore be able to search the phone. It draws no distinction and no line. Anytime there's a minor misdemeanor car crash, anytime there's a DUI, someone would be have their phone searched.
Well, presumably there's going to be some testimony, some facts given to the officer, a minor car accident. You know, officer, you know, I didn't see the stop sign. Okay, that doesn't, you know, were you on your phone? Were you texting? Were you distracted? No, I was just, for some reason, didn't see the stop sign. My fault. Okay. What are you going to do with that?
I don't think that allows an officer to therefore then get in a phone without
a warrant. I'm sorry.
I don't think it allows an officer to get into a phone without a warrant if the driver says, I was just ran the red light and there's no reason for it.
Let me follow up. So if that was the scenario, the actual bare bones affidavit, though, would probably cover that situation because it didn't really say what the nexus of needing the phone was to the cause of the accident, such as you were texting while driving. And it said may lead to this and may lead to that, and very generically said may lead to more information for the investigation or for the crime committed. So that the bare bones affidavit would actually work for that scenario, wouldn't it?
Just in the sense of that is bare bones and it's not enough?
Yes.
Yes, I mean, I think every single appellate judge in this case said that it's mere speculation. I think that that is actually the definition of bare bones affidavit as it's been set forth by the Supreme Court and multiple courts. And because of that, the Fifth District should have found that the good faith exception does not apply.
But counsel, if we were, assuming that we agree that there wasn't probable cause for the warrant, but not recognize the good faith exception of the officer here, wouldn't we be requiring the officer to have more legal knowledge than the magistrate who issued the warrant?
I think always there's going to be magistrates that are going to not look too carefully at an affidavit. I do think that anytime a police officer gets an affidavit which only says may as to the particular place to be searched, and there has to be some sort of general knowledge that a cell phone has a high expectation of privacy, I think that should set a red flag to the officer who's executing the warrant.
So you're saying this falls under one of the exclusions to the good faith exception, although what you're kind of like you're asking us to say the officers in that scenario should technically overrule the magistrate or the judicial officer's issuance of the warrant and not execute it.
I think any time a court finds that the good faith exception does not apply and an officer searched something, that would be an officer technically overruling the magistrate, but I mean, that's what appellate court review is about, and I think the Leon court pretty clearly stated that's really important to look at each and every individual case, and that they did not mean at all by coming forth with exceptions to say that they were not going to strictly enforce the Fourth Amendment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mishka.
Good morning, Associate Justices. Good morning, Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Clay Mishka, and I am an assistant prosecutor from Lincoln County representing the state in today's case. And we would ask today that the appellate court decision be affirmed. Just going straight into it. Justice Stewart, I think the point you just made about an officer having to have more knowledge than a magistrate is kind of the main issue with the proposition put forth by the appellant in this case. Now, If the court is to take up this proposition of law, every single officer, after they receive a signed search warrant, a signed arrest warrant, would now have to doubt the magistrate's decision going forward. And that, I think that it would be a dangerous situation for pretty much every search warrant.
So does the state concede that there was not probable cause?
Well, we believe there was probable cause. The initial magistrate believed there was probable cause. The trial court believed there was probable cause. The appellate court is the one that found that there was no probable cause, but it did not lack that.
Asking the state. What's the state's position? Was there probable cause or not?
We believe there was probable cause.
Why?
In the situation. Well, the affidavit set forth that these three phones were found at the collision. There is no testimony from either the deceased. There's no recollection from the defendant in this case. There are no witnesses.
Did you just say there's no testimony from the deceased?
I did.
There usually isn't.
Well, there might have been a video or something at some point. But that is what the cell phone search warrant is going to look for.
Well, but to that very point, there's no information indicating that these phones could have been a cause, and at the time that the warrant was requested, you already had the results, the test results. You knew that this individual had was severely intoxicated, had a large amount of drugs in his system, which arguably was the main cause of this. And the affiant said there may be evidence. I mean, it's not a possible cause determination, it's a probable cause determination.
Yes, and the importance of the intoxication, while it is not, there is nothing in Ohio code that says being intoxicated while driving would have been the presumptive cause under the charges. Now, Mr. Schubert, in this case, he had two counts charged under, I believe it was 29.03.16. He was charged under A1 of the statute, which is the A1 has to do with being intoxicated, whether it's alcohol or a drug of abuse. And the A2, the count two was charged under A2, which has to do with recklessness. And I believe that was the main guiding principle
well,
that
the... Well, isn't it reckless to drive the wrong way on a ramp?
Well, I don't believe the facts of this case were driving on a ramp. It was on a two-lane road.
But the wrong way. He was going the wrong way.
And based on the accident reconstruction and the opinions of the initial trooper who got there, it appeared that Mr. Schubert crossed the double yellow lines. But again, that is only based on the initial impressions of everything that
But if that's his impression, regardless of how that happened, that would establish the A2, the recklessness, regardless of whether it was because he was intoxicated or because he was distracted or because he was listening to his favorite song or fell asleep, whatever the reason, if the accident reconstructionist determined he crossed the line, that in and of itself provides...
Possibly. I think the standard of recklessness would take it above from a normal accident between two vehicles and something where distracted driving was the cause versus just simply going over the line for a moment. It's the difference between it being an accident between two drivers and a collision caused by reckless driving.
Well, but if we adopt so the state's position is that an affiant can always say about a cell phone, it may contain evidence of the alleged offense, and an affidavit should issue, because then everybody who carries cell phones who is arrested for an offense can have their cell phones checked.
Well, I think most search warrants, even if the word may is not the included word, it's always a possibility, or likely, or sometimes.
But is that enough for a search warrant?
Well, we believe there was enough in this due to the probable cause of where the cell phones were found and in the circumstances that the cell phones were found at the scene.
Counsel, let me ask you about the scope of the search of the cell phone. So the purported reason for searching was to see if he may have been using the phone and distracted, and that may have contributed to the accident. So presumably, if you received a warrant, you'd want to look at the call log, if he was on the phone at the time of the approximate crash, or a text. Would that necessarily allow you to search photographs contained on the phone? How would that relate to the investigation?
Well, think of how advanced cell phones are these days and being able to see what may have caused distracted driving. There are photos. You could have been taking photos. He could have been on the phone. He could have been on a FaceTime application. He could have been recording videos. He could have been watching Netflix. The phones can do so many things nowadays that being able to zero in on he was just on a call at the same time. Now, there may be a possibility to see that which app was being accessed at the last point in time before the accident, but again...
But doesn't that support your opponent's argument that there's always a cell phone? You always would want to get it, no matter what happened, because it does so many things. And then there's no privacy left.
Well, there's still a level of privacy. Remember, in this case, none of the data pulled from that first initial search warrant was pulled ever from the actual device. They were pulled from the SD cards that were taken out of the device due to the search warrant. Now, the password-protected phones were never accessed at any point in this case. And so going forward, I don't know if that was part of the record going forward, but that was one of the facts, is that everything was taken off of the SD cards that were found inserted into the phone due to the search warrant. Now, in case of privacy and a phone being active, in this case, one of the issues is one of the victim is deceased, the defendant has no memory, there's no witnesses to this accident any time, so at that point, there needs to be somehow established that how the accident occurred and whether distracted driving was a cause. There's no witnesses to this or any other testimony, and the car logs wouldn't show exactly a case of distracted driving.
Counselor, if we affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals here, the Court of Appeals found no probable cause for the warrant, correct?
Yes.
But found that there was a good faith exception which should keep the evidence in because the officer had a good faith exception use. If we affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals, does this then give license to all enforcement officers anywhere and everywhere to rely on a warrant that doesn't have probable cause, even by using the good faith exception, to always look into a cell phone?
I don't believe it's to always look into a cell phone, but it just is the application of the good faith exception that the Leon Court put forward, and this was the purpose of the good faith
exception.
But
under these circumstances, let's say we have similar circumstances, if a magistrate issues a warrant, and, you know, is that my question earlier, you know, should the officer be required to know more about the law than the magistrate? If an officer gets this warrant with no probable cause, then a cell phone can always be searched for any offense because it may contain evidence.
Oh, I believe, again, that issue, the error is then on the magistrate or the justice who issues the search warrant. It's not an error on the officer. The officer receives the warrant. Their job is essentially done, as they believe that probable cause is there, as stated by the judge or the magistrate who issued that warrant.
So the answer is yes, they should still always be able to have the evidence admitted.
Yes.
Under this scenario.
Under the good faith exception, as long as one of those four exceptions, the misleading, the false, or the lack of indicia are applied in this case.
Okay. So when would it be appropriate, let's say in this case, essentially we're getting this irrebuttable presumption of good faith reliance for all warrants, no matter how facially deficient. So if we agree with the Court of Appeals in this, and this is the situation, is there going to be any case where the good faith exception doesn't apply?
Yes, I believe defense counsel's brief has also cited to a couple of those, where, such as in U.S. versus Loughton with the Sixth Circuit, the affidavit in that listed that they wanted to search the home of a potential person who had drugs on them. It did not list an address for that home. It did not list the circumstances or with particularity at anywhere where those drugs may be found. And other situations where, such as in Hove, where the search warrant has no particularity at all in those kind of situations to search those areas, and thus a good faith exception would not have applied as the state attempted. And I believe that that's one of the primary supports in our case today, is that deterrence factor, that if the court today is to state that the good faith exception does not apply, what are we really deterring for an officer? What is the benefit for the courts in this situation? Now, if we're to just tell the officers here that this search warrant that a magistrate issued, that a trial court judge also upheld, and that then two appellate court judges also found that a good faith exception applies, we're telling the officers that they may not be able to trust the judgment of these judges as they're upholding the warrants that they're applying.
But in this particular case, the initial judge who issued the warrant, and then later the second judge who seemed to believe that whenever there's a car crash, you're allowed to search cell phones. If they make a mistake, based on the warrant being bare bones, then if it's even a more obvious one than that, and the officer sees it and questions it, the officer still has the good faith exception just because the magistrate or judge issued it?
Well, I guess maybe I'm not understanding your question correctly. It's that even though the judges may
made a mistake,
that the officers should then still question it even afterwards?
Well, what if the officer does, or what if the test is objective and not subjective when it comes to good faith? So what if the officer looked at it and said, no police officer in their right mind would think this is a good warrant?
Well, then that would go to one of the exceptions listed under the good faith exception.
Well, how could there be good faith if the warrant is defective on its face, and any police officer that has served enough warrants knows it? Would the good faith exception apply?
Well, no, because as the courts have stated in the test, it's the objective, a reasonable objective officer in that case. And so if a reasonable objective officer, as per the court's test, would read that and say, well, there's no way any officer could ever read such a search warrant and find this to be having either probable cause or a good faith exception, then no, it would not have applied in that case. However, that's not the case here, as we had Sergeant Cheney, I believe, authors the affidavit for the warrant. I'm sure he believes that there's probable cause going forward when he submits it to the issuing magistrate. And then the warrant is then sent off to wherever the phones are examined, and that officer makes a determination when he reads that, and he moved forward to search the phones. So we have two independent officers, both going through forward with the belief of probable cause in this warrant.
But if it's just a generic, without creating the probable cause for the magistrate or the judge to issue the warrant, where it just says generically could be maybe related to the investigation, maybe related to the crime, but basically doesn't say how, aren't we pretty much just throwing all these exceptions out the window?
I don't believe so. I think the court in the case involving, I believe it was Hoffman with the Toledo affidavits. I believe that was the case involved, that there was no probable cause at any point ever, even questions in those arrest warrants. And then, but the court still found that the good faith exception applied because the officers were reasonable in relying on those warrants that were being issued by the clerk of courts. And I believe that at some point, the issuing magistrate or the issuing magistrate of the warrant, it is going to be held responsible for the, if it completely lacks probable cause, they're the ones who need to step in. But once it is signed and approved, an officer, the court here at least is suggesting that the officer needs to be questioning the judgment of the magistrate at all times, no matter whether they authored and issued the warrant and it was signed, or whether they're receiving an issued warrant from the magistrate after it's been signed. If there are no further questions, I would just ask that the appellate court's decision today be affirmed. Thank you.
Counselor, yeah. You've used your time. You may take a minute.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to say that there's a lot of maze and possibilities, but that's not sufficient. This decision vests an officer with the ability to rummage through somebody's phone, and we'll never know if the phone was used in this car crash. That's just not a fact in this case. And the cell phones are afforded a high privacy interests, which would otherwise be stripped if we were allowed to say that anytime there's a crash, we can search through someone's phone. So I'd ask this court to reverse the decision.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision.